This is Surviving the Music Industry.
That sounds sick.
I didn't think about how that sounded.
Hey, you're here. Welcome back. Wake up. Go to sleep. I don't know how you listen to this thing, but either way, you're here with me, Brendan Harrington, and this is my podcast, Surviving the Music Industry. It's not a cheesy, businessy thingy. Get that out of your head. I got pretty good reviews on most of the stuff, like with the show, but I feel like when people like get upset, they kind of want like, you know, how can I survive the music industry? Well, I mean, this isn't the thing. I'm surviving the music industry. I get to talk to pretty rad people. And this is the thing. Welcome. Walk in. Join into the family. It's great. It's nice and kosher. It's lovely. We don't scream at each other. I got a story about that in a second. But I'm sure you're here for my conversation with Jordan Sloan from Hounds. Rad band. I got to know. I didn't know. I was made aware of by a publicist. You know, all you kiddies out there wondering how people get on to the show. But sometimes I reach out. Sometimes they reach out. And when they reach out, they use their people. So in this case, they use their people. Welcome, everybody. So should we start this off right? How you doing out there? Are you feeling good? Is everybody feeling great in the headspace? I hope everybody's feeling nice and lovely in their depression blanket. And I have one, by the way. I don't know if it's really called a depression blanket, but it's a weighted blanket. It's a weighted blanket. It feels nice when I get pretty low. I like to get all wrapped up in a blanket that weighs like a cow. So it's nice and comfy. It's toasty. But I hope more than anything, jokes, hyperbole, whatever, satire, out of the way. Hope you folks are doing okay. If not, reach out, talk to somebody, stay in touch. Add us in my podcast or at Unofficial Brandon on the talks and in the old grams. So it seems like things are kind of opening up. Things are getting back to normal. That feels nice and lovely and beautiful. I'm still wearing my mask. You don't have to wear your mask. That's not a political statement. I'm all vaxxed. I got the J&J, the one and done. But, you know, I don't have gills yet. I'm waiting on that one. It's not a political statement by me saying I'm wearing a mask. I just wear a mask because I feel like that makes some people feel comfortable. And plus, we are in this quote-unquote pandemic, okay? We're still in the thing. So for me, I'm just wearing a mask. Honestly, my missus, she has difference of opinions, and that's great. So anyway, I was out in public. And if you guys know me, I'm not the most, you know, the things that people set in stone, a society that makes, you know, things normal, some things just don't make sense to me. So for example, you may be raising a pitch about masks. My quirks are about high fives. I don't like high fives. I think it's the weirdest freaking thing ever invented in all of humanity interactions. Hey, congratulations. Let's raise our hands and slap them together. Because you crave touch and the sound and the warmth of like less than a millisecond of somebody's palm of their hand. Okay, that means something to you. It's never meant anything to me. I think it's an awkward, it's a weird interaction. Now, fast forward to the new millennium, there's like 20 versions of high fives, and I don't know what this person is going to do. You know, are they going to just one and done? That's great. Now, are they going to do like the clap and then rotate it and then the pound to pound and then I don't know. I don't know what the other person is going to do. So you know what? I just make it funny. Maybe I tickle somebody's elbow. I don't know. Maybe I just poke their hand. I don't know. That's my gut reaction, honestly, because I just don't like high fives. It's a weird interaction. Somebody went to do a high five. I didn't know this person. And honestly, I just poked. They had their hand up flat, and I just went, boop. And I thought it was funny. I was smiling. And then they took it all political. They said, oh, you're one of those. One of those? What do you mean? You know, one of those vaxxers. Well, I did get one of those. What do you mean? So you're afraid to touch somebody? You're afraid you're going to get sick? No, not at all. In fact, I'm kind of sick of this already. And I don't know if you guys know me, but like things get tense. I tend to go for the jugular. And so that... It made him furious, and he was stumbling all over his words. And so eventually, it wasn't a great conversation, most human quality of a moment there for sure. It wouldn't be on Instagram. It would definitely be on TikTok. But I don't know. Where are we in humanity that one, that whatever you do, whatever you say, again, I poked the guy's hand. He took it political. He took it to a political realm. He didn't know me. He didn't know that this thing inside my head, but man, just it went 80 so quick. Went 88. He was blazing a trail. It got hot. You'd think he would have gone back to the future with Doc Brown right at that second. But man, woo, it got tense. It got tense. So that's what my week's been looking like. But as far as like industry stuff, as far as my career, you know what's weird? It's like, what do you do next? I've been talking to my therapist about this, you know, like, it's not like I'm Ryan Seacrest by any means, you know, so trying to figure out maneuver, like, next steps, what that thing is, and so that's been a lot of fun diving into that, but what's going through the brain, all in all, be grateful where you're at, who you are, what you have, and the people that you're around. You may not be around somebody that you really enjoy. You may not even appreciate them. You know, you poke their hand, they take it to a political side, and they just go 88 miles per hour, all like 2 seconds flat. You know what? It's okay. We're all humans. We mess up. Try to tackle it with much better grace than I. Be a better human than I was probably in that situation. I went for the joke personally. Maybe a wrong move. Probably the wrong move. I don't know. All I guess I'm trying to say, be well, everybody, because you're doing great. I have to say, if you're listening to this, you're doing great in the world right now. Appreciate what you have, because it, I mean, if you were, I don't know, if you were in it, if you were in the shit, you know, if you were in it, you probably wouldn't be listening to this, right? Unless I make you feel better. So that's great. That makes me feel good. So I don't know. Keep in touch. All those places I mentioned before. Just use the search bar. But let's move on. Let's get to the thing. Let's get to the main attraction. It's Jordan Sloan, frontman from Hounds. I don't know if you guys watch reality TV. I kind of have a bad taste in my mouth about reality TV because I did the reality TV thing. I don't know if I shared that with them. Maybe I did. But they come from Who Will Rock You. I don't know if you guys seen this show. It's I want to say it's just produced. It's made by Topgolf. And pretty great prize money, pretty great reward because they won the thing. They got like 50 grand and then recording contract. They got management and the whole bag, which is honestly a lot better deal than like most people, which is super interesting. I know we did talk about that. Dee Snider is a judge. Twisted Sister. I'm a Twisted Sister fan. No, I shouldn't lie. I shouldn't do that. I'm not into the glam rock. That wasn't my thing. That wasn't my bag. But Dee Snider is a human. Man, smart guy. Did some things. Political. He really took it to Tipper Gore. I don't know. Probably most of my audience is probably too young for that. But anyway, rad dude. He was a judge. But I'm talking to Jordan here. He's got a brother in the band, Logan Sloan. Other members, Jack McCoy, Logan Moeller. All kind of St. Louis boys. Got together, we talked about their former project, talked about their former music, we humanized their music, and we talked about the ups and the downs. He's got some pretty rad stories. Talked about Chuck Berry, and of course, talked about the reality show, and then, you know, the relationship in the bands is always interesting to me, because bands just don't work out. They eventually just don't work out, and we talked about that dichotomy a lot, too, but they got a record out. It's been out since probably about February. But we're just now releasing this because, I mean, we got in touch, I mean, well, when the record was done. So we're just now releasing this. But we talked, Jordan and I, we talked a bit ago. But Cattle in the Sky, nonetheless, it's out. It's everywhere. You should go listen to it because there's some jams on it. And I really enjoyed it. And we get into it. We talked about the songs and their songwriting process and the whole shtick and the whole bag. So I don't know what you guys are waiting for. Well, probably for this to be over. So just wait. Hold. You can go give them a follow at Hounds, and of course go visit their website for any tour dates, merch, swag, whatever you want. It's over at their website, houndssounds.com. again, go give them a follow everywhere. Tour dates start to become a thing, so I'm sure they got stuff posted up for you. Go check them out. It's a rock show. You guys be into it. But to set this thing up, we originally had a time set, and then some wires got crossed. So I wanted to bring it up. I just wanted to know, hey, everything all good? Everything all fine? It's not normal for people just not to show up, even though, you know, it's Zoom. I probably wouldn't show up either. So, but at the same time, is everything okay? All right, so here's my conversation with Jordan Sloan of Hounds.
I'll tell you, I don't think I was even told. I don't think that I ever knew we had an interview. And so I've only ever known. So when you asked that, I'm like, have we? I don't think we've done this before. So
Do I know this guy? What is like, the situation?
Yeah. So I really think that it was some weird scheduling oversight, because this is the first scheduling that I've even heard of.
Dude, rock and roll etiquette 101. You did it. Yeah. Blame it on somebody else. Yeah. You got it. You didn't get the memo. You did it.
Didn't get the memo.
Yeah, that's all right. There's a piece of me, like when I was 28, if I had like 50K and I had something like this like scheduled, nah, I'm good. Xbox Live all day. Yeah, you know what I mean? Done.
Well, I'm sorry we missed the first one. I didn't even know, man. Now I feel bad.
Yo,
I'm
going to
send you an edible arrangement with an apology.
You're speaking to a fat kid's wet dream. This is sounding really good.
Yeah.
That's all right. No, seriously, it's all jokes, I promise. Because more than anything, I was just worried. But yeah, all is good. All is well. Missouri, that's where you're at. Is that where we're talking each other at? I'm in Nashville, by the way.
Nashville, right on. Yeah, yeah. I'm St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. This is hometown.
Yeah.
So you guys have, like, you're just not planning on leaving ever. Like, this is the place.
I don't know if that's totally true. I think that, I mean, we're all big on travel. This, the quarantine and pandemic and the lack of travel, we were on the cusp of basically not being home for most of the year again, because we did that at one point as a previous band, where it was like 180 days. We were out on the road, we were pumped on it, and it was just like, it became a part of our lives. And it became more comfortable to sleep in a van that was like moving and shaking you than it was to sleep in your own bed, just because you get used to something. But we were getting ready for a lot of travel and a lot of stuff, and then everything got shut down. So we're ready to leave again. And I don't know if that means that St. Louis won't be somewhat of a home, because we have so much family here. But I mean, I want to see what it's like to live in New York City. I want to see what it's like to live in Chicago. I want to see what it's... I almost moved to Nashville about 3 years ago, but then band members were put together in St. Louis, and we stayed here because it just financially made more sense. Everybody's stuff was here.
Man, I'm not mad at that. There's nothing about St. Louis like I dislike. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like for me, it's just huge. Like, it reminds me of Houston. Like, there's just so many like huge like pockets of places.
Yes, and it is.
I guess that's the con of it. But more than any, like, there's stuff to do. You know,
sure,
it's still a metropolis.
It's a horizontal city, man. It's just like there's a definitely big sectors all over the place, and then even stuff where it's not that much further out. I mean, Casey's not that far of a drive. So like, you've got cities stacked kind of around you, and then a lot of the suburbs end up having cool stuff too. So
yeah, that's true, man. You ever made it to, or ever played at Blueberry Hill when it was a thing?
Oh yeah. We got a chance to open up for Chuck Berry at Blueberry Hill.
Stop it. That was like, that's been my biggest regret in my like live music portion of my life, whatever that means. Like, I've never seen Chuck Berry, and there's been opportunities when I could have, but I've never done it. So you opened for the Chuck.
We actually got to play a show with him. Yeah, it was just literally just, we were like direct support, just us and him. And it was a weird thing. It felt like it felt like there was some sort of energy in the air that kept all of us in town, because I had friends that were wanting me to go to Columbia, Missouri, and we're wanting to go party that weekend. And I was like, no, I don't know why, but like, it's not that I feel down. I just feel like I can't leave. I feel like I got to stay here. And I had nothing going on. For some reason, I got myself all dressed up like I was going to be going to a show, like I was going to like look nice or on like a date or something. And then I got a call and was like, can you be at Blueberry Hill in 1 hour? You're opening for Chuck Berry. And I was like, yeah, I'm actually weirdly ready. I don't know why. And it just ended up happening. That was a stressful weekend.
Oh, man. But it's so worth it. It's just well, fuck, please. I mean, that does not come very often, bro. That's insane. All right, so St. Louis. What part of St. Louis are you in?
So I live about 25 minutes outside of the city in St. Charles, Missouri. And yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're at.
Yeah. Like Old Town St. Charles is like 10 minutes away from me, and I work down there. I bartend that way.
Your brother's in the band. I know this about you, too. I mean, have you guys always done the music thing, like growing up?
I feel like life is kind of put together in different weird chapters. So in my head, we have not been doing music together forever, but we've been doing it for the majority of the chapters of our life. So like he was doing music and I was doing music separate before we started doing it together. And it sounds weird in my brain to say that we haven't done it forever when we started doing it together when he was in seventh grade. So it's like,
Oh, so you're older.
I'm the older one. Yeah. He's 2.5 years younger than I am. And so, we started doing stuff. I was playing bass for a band. He just picked up a guitar and wanted to do a rock and roll thing. And we all played really bad punk rock music. We didn't know what we were doing, but it was loud and it was awesome.
We all did. We know what that is.
Oh yeah. Angsty and wonderful and weirdly trying to do like Kesha covers. I don't know why we did that, but we did Kesha covers. And there's video proof on YouTube for that, that it can be found. But
that's so random to me. I never would have thought like to put a Kesha cover like to a punk song. But I mean, that works. That 100% works in my imagination.
Yep. It was weird, but we loved it. And we've been playing music for, I guess, he and I off and on for about 13 years. The only one that hasn't at some point put it like on the sidestep is me and the drummer Logan Moeller. We're the two that like kept it moving and kept it moving and kept it moving. And even, I mean, I say that, but Logan, he also stepped in and like made sure that they kept it going. There was like 1 week where he got mad at me and my brother, maybe a month. And my brother and I fight because we both think that we're right all the time. And we're both just like the, we combat with each other. We're combative about the musical direction about things, which is brilliant because we're just the most competitive individuals. But he got mad one time and just like basically like threw his sticks and was like, I don't want to talk. I don't want to do this. You guys are so annoying. You fight about everything. You're stupid. And he just like left and he joined a metal band for a month. And then he came back later after my brother and I, like, we're just going to do an acoustic thing, I guess. And he came back. He's like, hey, that other band like kind of sucks. I miss you guys. Do you want to like, I don't know, hang out? I know you're doing a show. Do you need a drummer for it? And then he never quit again.
That's so good. I love that. Okay. Well, I mean, that's been a looming question in my imagination. I mean, do we have like what are the brothers, Liam and Noel Gallagher? Do we have like that kind of situation between you and your brother? You guys just hate each other? Or is it just really... No
hate at all. We're just both so artistically competitive that anything, I mean, for example, like one of our singles on this record that we just put out on Cattle in the Sky, it's called Shake Me Up. It's got a sister song called Long Way Down that's on the record as well. But when those songs were written 5 years ago, Logan wrote Long Way Down first. And I was like, that's cool. I'm going to beat it. And so I wrote Shake Me Up as a response to Long Way Down, and Shake Me Up ended up being the lead single for this record. And so like that's just how our brains work. He wrote another song called In Your Eyes that I thought was the better song, but it was voted out by the band members. Like, no, we like the first song on this record, To Be In Love, better than we like In Your Eyes. And those two songs were kind of like we both wrote a song that were similar, and then we just decided which one was the better one. And we've always been that way, where we just want to see if we can outdo the other one.
Yeah, man, I love bands. I love bands so much.
Dude, are you sure?
Yeah. But the thing is, like for me, like with bands, and I've always wanted to be a part of one, and I have, like in my past, but the thing is, like, they just never work out. Because a lot of that, like to me, I always felt like the competition almost outweighed like at least the brotherhood of it all,
sure.
Like the relationships of it. But you guys are like blood, you know what I mean? Like yeah. you're forced to see each other on holidays and stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, even sooner than that, man, like they come, my brother and his wife come over just about every Sunday just to hang out. And so it's just like, we're always around each other. We can have a thing where we can tell each other how big of an ass we think the other one is, and that their song sucks and their ideas suck, and they're being a huge dick about something. And we're just like, all right, well, now it's over. Do you want to play Xbox? It's like, we still are. I mean, that we're very much like, we're very close siblings. And even our youngest brother, Jacob, he's in that same grouping. Like we're all just, we were each other's first best friends, I guess, growing up.
Yeah.
And so that never stopped for us, even though my brother and I are like button heads all the time about music stuff.
Yeah, well, you guys are forced to kind of see each other now, like vocationally, and your family too. That makes sense. But there's three of you.
Yeah.
Okay, that opens up the dynamic a lot more. I mean, like, were your parents all cool with this, like the music and stuff?
They never had any issue with it, but we didn't. I mean, I didn't really even listen to music until I was 14 years old or so, because I remember like going to my mom's car when my dad would be at work, because like we were homeschooled for a very short amount of time, and I was a bad student and she couldn't keep me down for anything. So I would sneak out of the house when she was, I don't know, doing something, laundry or like back in her room or whatever it was she had going on. And I'd sneak out and I'd go and I'd turn on the car and I'd sit and I'd listen to the radio just to see what it was, because I felt like I was doing something wrong. And I heard a Nelly song for the first time. And actually in that moment, I'm like, I'm going to be in so much trouble, because I'd never heard rap music before. And so I was like, I was just so, I guess it was a jarring situation to hear something that was so opposite of the only music I'd heard at that point, which was Johnny Cash and Michael W. Smith and Stephen Curtis Chapman, and maybe like, I don't know, Gretchen Wilson or something like that. Like, it was just like all country pop and then Christian, I guess, contemporary music, whatever it was considered at the time. But like, that's the only stuff I'd ever really heard. And so I grew up on old country, pop country, and then sprinkled in with some Christian artists, but it was never intentional listening. It was just a part of what we were doing. So I didn't really pay much that much attention to it. I just knew that it would be on. There were songs that my dad would like kind of sift through on the radio that he liked, and I didn't get a choice. I was just along for it. I was playing baseball, I was playing basketball, I was playing soccer, I was doing cross country and stuff like that. And I was just a sports kid until I finally, like, backyard football, I dislocated my knee, just stepped in a hole and did something stupid. And I was in a little immobilizer cast thing for, it's like almost 2 months, just sitting. They got me a Guitar Hero for my brothers and I. And I played that and I realized, like, oh my gosh, Motorhead is so tight. And so I just found like this new introduction to music through a video game. And then I was like, I'm going to learn how to actually play a guitar. And so I started picking up stuff and just moving that way.
And that's where it all kind of started for you. Yeah. So you grew up in a Christian home. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I did too. I had to do the thing where I had to hide albums like inside like covers. You know what I mean? Like, I hid like a Korn record inside a Stephen Curtis Chapman cover or something. you know what I mean? So, yeah. But I understand that dynamic. Like, you find something that it doesn't sound like that. They even say the wrong things. And then you're kind of left with, ooh, this is kind of bad.
Yeah.
I kind of want to do a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right? Is that the same feeling? Yeah. I can respect that. I've been there. Okay. But you were a sports kid. You weren't a weird nerdy kid. You weren't a music guy.
Oh, I was super weird. I was super weird nerdy kid. I was not like the typical sports kid at all. I had never, I mean, I don't know. Maybe saying that I was a nerdy kid is a little bit incorrect. I just feel like I hadn't figured out where I was supposed to be until I got into high school. Like, all the way through elementary school and middle school, like, I had friends and I was on teams, but like, it was all about like my camaraderie was those teams. I didn't have like friends at school. It was all my like select baseball team, like just the people that I hung out with after school that I really hang out with. So up until actually, you know what I think it was? I tell my girlfriend this all the time. I think what made me actually cool is my foster brother, Ricky, because he was so much cooler than I was. And so, like, he took this little dorky white kid that didn't have like proper fitting jeans or t-shirts, and we started skateboarding and playing music. Like, he wanted to be a drummer. So I was like, I want to be a drummer. I can't drum. Can't drum to save my life. But like, he was just so much cooler than I was. So he kind of took me under his wing as like a friend brother, like, combo that I didn't have before. And from there I started figuring out, like, oh, like, beyond like my sports teams, like, I can be competitive in these different areas. Oh, I have other interests. Oh, this stuff is cool. I didn't even realize that I liked, I don't know, stuff like records and sneakers and guitars. And I don't know, just I started to open up, I think, to stuff when he was around.
Gotcha. Got you. Like, drugs entered the picture or anything, like, after high school, like band life?
No, I mean, kind of like, not because of band life. I just had some skater friends, and we would steal beer out of our neighbors' garages and we would smoke weed, but that was it. It wasn't like we weren't big druggy kids. It was just kind of, to me, what seemed like and seems still like kind of the harmless stuff. It wasn't except for a couple weird diversions in my life that I actually did hard drugs of any kind.
What does that mean? Like the diversions? Like,
I don't know. It was like, so I've only done psychedelics one time. I've only done I've only done it once. And it was more like strap in. You're about to experience something that you can't understand. You just can't understand it. And at the end of it, you're going to have some sort of revelation, maybe, especially if it's like a first time on something, I think. And if I was, I did acid as the first thing and only thing that I've ever done. And I didn't really plan on it. I wanted to do mushrooms. Because me and a friend of mine,
acid is going for it, man.
did even more than that. I didn't just do I did 3 tabs of acid for my first trip. So I was on another planet. And I didn't realize it because it was one of those situations where like, I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know how long it was going to take. I thought I would just like put the piece of paper in my mouth or the pieces of paper in my mouth. And then I'd just be like transported to another world where I'm talking to imaginary, like, penguin dragons and hanging out at, I don't know, some sort of space dimension thing or something. Like, it, in my mind, it was so much more of a cartoon than it really was.
That's my dream. That's what I want it to be.
That's what you want it to be. Okay.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, I mean, I may be thinking of it wrong, but DMT may be your thing then, because it's like 15 minutes in, 15, and then you're out kind of a thing, but it feels like 6 hours.
Oh, okay. The only reason I'm even asking is I had this crazy thought because I started listening to you guys' music like during this whole winter storm. And so there's snow in the ground. And I thought, and I honestly, I got 3 hits of acid. That's about where I got to. And I was looking outside and I thought, holy shit, I wonder what a hit of acid and looking at all this white, like what, like what would that do? Like that has to be an insane like trigger like inside your brain to go somewhere else. But again, I don't know how it really works just because of my own bad experiences.
Sure. I mean, for me, it was... I think that that would be a really trippy experience because especially when you're going through something that's such a, I don't know, mental head trip, you don't really feel or smell or touch or taste anything the same way. Like I remember at the time I was trying to drink Mountain Dew and it just didn't even taste like Mountain Dew anymore. It's like my taste buds had changed. I didn't understand what hot or cold were anymore. It was like all of like the regular senses had been distorted in some way. And so things were just, everything was different. It's not just that you see or think about things different. It's like everything in that moment for me was completely different than regular life. So seeing a bunch of snowfall, like, I don't know. You wouldn't even feel that it was cold if you walked outside. You'd probably just sit out there and freeze to death.
Yeah, I love that. See, every time I have these DMT conversations or anything psychedelic, like everybody has like a pretty good experience from it. There's only been one person that was just like, it was the worst decision of my life. Like Billy Strings was just like, oh, it's great. It's the thing. It's religion. And then, but when I talked to John Oates, like Hall & Oates, he was just kind of like, yeah, we did it when we watched Night of Living Dead for the first time.
Oh.
And it was just like, holy shit. Like, why? Why would you do that?
They were looking for a bad night.
That's it. Good experiences. Okay, good to know. See, I'm also that dude like, meth sounds kind of fun, but I'll do it when I'm 90. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like when it's all over.
Hey, let me know how it goes.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe not at that point. Mm. Yeah. Okay, so the brothers, and you finally getting the music and everything. When does Clockwork, and is this kind of the beginning of Clockwork for you guys? Like, when did that start? Were you guys in high school? Was it in college?
Clockwork started when I was, I mean, I think I was a senior in high school at that point. And my brother and my drummer were both freshmen in high school. That was when we started to finally put together the pop, sort of the rock pop sound that we were leaning towards at the time. That was, it was tricky in our minds because I think we went into the studio and we're like, oh my gosh, this was the first big studio we went in when we did our Clockwork EP at. And we walked in and we immediately thought like, this is going to be it. We're going to do these 5 songs. We're going to put them out. And then like in a couple months, people are going to hear them. We're going to get invited to the Grammys. Like this is how it's going to be. I'm like 17 years old. I don't know what I'm doing. I can barely even play my guitar. And so it was just like, a big learning curve for us. All of Clockwork was. It was awesome because we were so uninformed about what the music industry was like and how big and how small it is, depending on how you look at it, because it reaches to so many different places, but you're working with so many of the same people and you don't even realize that until you're in it.
Yeah, but bro, that's like the best time, like to me, like when you know nothing and you're just having a ball. And then when it becomes the thing, it's just like, how much longer is this? How long is this interview or whatever? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is that how you feel right now? You're trying to gauge how long the interview is going to be, or like?
No, I was hoping you caught it, and I hoped you were going to use it, and you did. I like you. I like you even more.
Right on.
Okay. Now the only thing I ever heard was Out to Sea, and that record came out like 2014, 2013. But you guys were together like 2010, so you guys had stuff before that. Like, how much different was the earlier stuff all the way to Out to Sea?
I'd say quite a bit different. I mean, we were learning, man. We were babies when we did the EP. That was the first thing. By the time we got to Out to Sea, we were still babies, but we were at least a little bit more knowledgeable about how to go about songwriting, about how to go, like, really lean into the things that worked for us. I mean, I was never at that point, especially, a great guitar player, but I knew that I could lean on my vocal ability and like what my range was. And we could lean on the fact that my brother and I could do harmonies. So if we can do that, and we know that the drummer's really solid and he's going to do something that's going to get people moving and they can't stop looking at him when we're doing shows, 'cause he just smiles so big the whole time. If we can lean into our strengths, it doesn't matter that I'm not this like crazy wizard at guitar. My brother, honestly, our lead lines were all bass guitar for the most part. Like, he was doing so much with the music there that like lead guitar was really the bass, but the bass was always locked into the drums. And so it was like the lead perspective changed for us, is like how that was formed. And I think that we just learned how to, like, that's really what Out to Sea was. It's learning how to lean into what worked for us. And then going into like the final Clockwork record that we did, that was way more like a collection of songs than it was a record, because it took 2 years to record and it was with five different producers. And by the time we got it done to it, we didn't really look at it as a record. It was just like, oh yeah, I like that song and I like this song. These ones don't go together, but it's cool if we like group them with this one. And it was all learning. It was like the rough draft of Hounds. That's all Clockwork was for us.
Yeah. Okay. So at this point you had your brother was still in the band.
Yeah. So he left. He's actually been involved in every record. But he left after we recorded the first Hounds record. He let us know he was leaving before that. But he was looking at the songs we were doing and how we were going about it. And he just told me and the drummer, sat us down. He's like, hey, I am exhausted. And I don't know that I don't know how much longer I want to do this. And he just kind of point blank asked us, where do you see this going? And Moeller and myself looked at him. We're like, we're going to do it till we die. I don't know if that's going to be in a couple of years from now, or it's going to be 40 years from now, or whatever it is. But we've pretty much found out that this is what we're going to do, however that looks. And he wasn't ready to make that commitment.
Was he just like tired of the grind itself? I mean, you guys were grinding on the road and like just doing the thing as a band does. That can take a lot.
He was tired of the grind, but he was also, I think, afraid of the commitment, because he told us that he thought the record we were getting ready to do could be the catalyst to us actually having a true career in it, which it was. And like, it was kind of like a premonition of his, I guess, because we used the songs that are on that record to propel us forward to get to where we got signed by BMG. We started, we won the top golf competition that went on with Who Will Rock You. And we moved into creating this record, and now we've got, I mean, We're at a more successful point now than we've ever been, even with the pandemic going on. And he saw those things and wasn't sure that that's what he wanted. And it just took him maybe about a year and a half to 2 years of time off and seeing that we were going to do it with or without him, I think. And then him having time to see what another form of life would be like. I mean, he was going to an office job, and he said it clicked for him one day when the people in the cubicles next to him had the same conversation for the fifth day in a row. He was like, I'm going to die here. And so he just had this like ridiculous revelation about it. And I had just asked him like a month before that, because we were getting ready to work on Cattle in the Sky, which hadn't been named yet, but it was just like the record we were working on. I asked him, I'm like, hey, the last record was a success and I love your mind on things. Having you involved makes me more involved because we're so competitive. You need to be in the room with me. You need to be producing this record with me, even if you're not on the record. Produce the record. Come produce the record with me. And he said he would do it, and he was excited about it. He started working out stuff on keys because he wanted to do a lot more part writing and a little bit more of like a true like compositional arrangement to it, not just like A B A B C B rock and roll music.
Right.
And by the time he got about 2 months into it, he pulls me aside. He goes, hey, can we get I'm gonna do a production meeting with you real fast. Can we just meet up? I'm like, yeah, where you want to meet up? He's like, I'll just come over to the house. He comes over to the house, and we're sitting in our rehearsal space. And he goes, so I lied. I don't really want to have a production meeting. I want to tell you I'm joining the band again. I'm like, you want to tell me you're joining the band again? He's like, I really like to. I think that I need to do it. I'm like, what are you going to play? We have a bass player. We don't need a bass player. Jack's great. And he was like, no, I don't want to play bass. Bass isn't my instrument anyways. There's not enough that I can do. I'm your keyboard player, which I always wanted a keyboard player. But when it was me and Logan, they didn't want to add another member. So we were always stuck without a keyboard player. I'm like, guys, we're losing something here. We need to have this other piece that'll take the music to the next place. Cause we're missing the mark on how far we can go. We're, as David Byrne said about the Talking Heads, like his three piece version of the Talking Heads, it was a sketch of what the band would be once they started adding, when they added that fourth member. And once they started going on tour, with Remain in Light and bringing Adrian Belew and all their stuff, like they evolved to the band they could be because they had that extra piece. That's, I mean, not to say we're anything like Talking Heads, but that was like it for me. I'm like, we aren't there yet. We just aren't there yet. And when Logan told me he wanted to do that, he was specific. He's like, you need a Mellotron player. Like, what? We need a Mellotron player? And he showed me all the stuff. Now we've got the M4000D hanging out in our studio. He's got like this old Casio and like these different Yamaha keyboards. He's got a YC and a CP, I think is what it is. And he's just expanding. He's talking about how he wants to bring in synthesizers now. His rig is the biggest rig out of all of ours. But yeah. It's cool how it kind of opened itself back up. Even though he did leave, he had to have that time to see what the other version of life was. And he and his wife were like, we don't want that. That's not going to work for us. We know it's not going to work for us. You need to get back into music. You're miserable without creating. And now it works.
Yeah. I love the imagery of the Spinal Tap moment, their keyboard player. Like it's just surrounded by keys. I really hope that's it.
That's going to be him. He doesn't want it, but he also really wants it.
Yeah, of course. There's no other way you can have it. It has to be that.
Yep.
Yeah, I have to say, I love trios. Like, there's just something about a trio band that really just gets me all tickled in my fancy. Like, there's just something that's just really gnarly about it to me in my imagination. But I have to say, it definitely isn't the same sound. You can definitely reproduce or do different stuff in the studio. But, you know, from Clockwork to Cattle in the Sky, completely different things, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But would you say that Logan is pretty instrumental when it comes to like producing, especially the part writing, the music of it, especially Cattle in the Sky?
I mean, without a doubt, I don't think that is something that any of us can escape from. I mean, even the way we go about songwriting, especially now, it's there's an acoustic song or a you know, somewhat produced demo that we'll bring to the table for everything. But everyone like me and Jack and Slogan will all bring songs to the table. And it took us a while to get to a point where we go, here is the song. How is it Hound's song? Instead of how is it Jordan or how is it Slogan or how is it Jack or how is it Moeller? Like, how is it Hound's song? Even though like you may have written the chord structure and the lyrics and like it's your personal thing now, for each part, give up like a piece of your lyricism, give up a piece of your vocal melody idea, give up the bass line idea, give up the keyboard idea, and let the others see where it inspires them to go. Because that's really how we've built all of our music, is letting our egos go so that we don't have to sit back and go, hey man, that's not how I would really do the bass part. Like, there's going to be that conversation, But because if there's like a general idea or like a bone structure you want them to fit into, but no one wants to be smothered. And if everyone's a songwriter, especially, you got to be careful about egos.
And there's also something to be said about that too, of like not being afraid to let your ego speak up for you, I guess, maybe a lack of better way. And this is really what I mean. Like when I listen to this record, it's not just like a straight, you know, 1-4-5-6. It's not just a straight rock and roll song. It's just not four in the floor. Like there's some quirky moments that make the music interesting and like take you somewhere. And there's places it makes you think of, oh, well, maybe, you know, they were Revolver and it turns into Rubber Soul. You know, like whatever happened between that 6 months between those two records, like something switched within the band.
Yeah.
And I never know like what that thing is. And I don't think most bands really do, but it really does seem like the recipe, the thing that changed was like being able to speak up and say, this be the thing, and make it a collaborative effort instead of just letting your ego kind of take over. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think, well, that's, it has to be. I mean, and I struggle with this. I'm stammering all over my words right now, but I struggled with this big when my brother left and it was just me and Moeller. My initial thought was, I don't trust anybody. I'm not letting anybody back in the same way that I did before. If my own brother can leave my group, then there's no way in hell I'm letting anybody else in with any kind of.
That's tough. Trust in a band and not being able to trust.
Well, we've been doing it for like 10 years at that point or something, or 9 years. And so since we had been working as long as we've been working on it, I was like, I can't afford any more backpedaling. So this is now under the alias Hounds. For all intents and purposes, this is the Jordan Sloan band. And it's going to have other people involved. But it took me, I think, 2 years to get over that and be like, okay, we're better when we collaborate and everyone wants credit with their thing. So, and that's right. I mean, everyone should get credit for the things that they do. But it took me a while to like really start to trust everybody again and go, okay, you can't, like, you know, if you do this, you can't leave. Like leaving this now, you know that you're breaking something in a huge way. Like between us as human beings, not even just as bandmates, like as human beings, you would be destroying something if you leave this. And everybody kind of had to like really own up to that and prove that they really wanted it, which is again, hard for me to trust. And I think it was hard for Logan Moeller to trust as well. Jack coming in, I mean, he was a band member for a year before he was like one of our brothers. And we had to get to that point of like, are you willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to not go to work so you can go on this gig? Are you willing to do the things? Like it's not a, I mean, being in a band is not an easy thing. I think it's easier to be, anything else, but it's, I think it even easier to be a little bit of a solo artist in the sense of you don't have to check to see if it's okay with somebody if you do this, or it's, you have to check to make sure that everybody's pride is in a healthy place. Cause I mean, if your ego's out of whack and you're going to rehearsal and you're not feeling it and you can't talk to the other people about it, it was wasted 4 hours, wasted 6 hours, whatever it is. And so just learning those things was interesting, but I mean, I'm really happy with where it landed. And I don't really even remember where this question started. I'm ranting now.
No, it's okay. That's what this is. Eventually we all kind of self-deprecate and rant. Yeah. At some point. But the thing, especially with changes, and now I feel like, I guess maybe up to the point of like doing the competition, like Top Golf, I feel like, and I've been on a competition show for bands, and my situation sucked, so you don't have to speak truly about yours. But the thing about that, and the reason we did it is because, well, we just saw an opportunity and let's just kind of go for it and do it. But what was the situation for you guys to say, do we really want to do a competition? Do we really want to do this, get out in front of people? Because there's a piece of me that hated signing the paper. But at the same time, there was like, you know, why not?
We were on that by accident. That was not something that I didn't seek that at all. So my ex-girlfriend's mom, she actually gave us the information on this show because I think she was trying to get her daughter to be on it, but she didn't have a band. And so they're like, well, she doesn't have a band, so she can't be in it. And then they were like, well, what about this band? And they talked about us and they're like, yeah, they can submit. And we submitted, we did like the competition thing. We went through it. Like, I remember talking to my Logan Moeller and Jack and being like, okay, if we do this, we got to do a cover song, which we're bad at. And we got to do like, and that's the first round. If we do the first round, we can get in, play our music. And I think that we have a shot, but we've got to figure out what we can do for the first round. And it was an odd conversation because it's not something that we would have done as an original band, but it is an original band competition. That's what they wanted. They just wanted it to be engaging for an audience. So they're like, you have to do at least one cover.
That was the problem with our show. I'll go ahead and say our show is America's Next Greatest Band.
All right.
It was a Simon Fuller thing. It was on Fox TV. It was just a shit show. It was a shit show of like, first of all, nobody knows what they're doing. And if it's American Idol to The Voice, nobody knows what they're doing at all. And so that's, you know, strike one or what, however you want to look at it. I guess the strike two of it is like, it's America's Next Cover Band. That's what it felt like, you know? Like, we were a country rock thing at that point, and it was just like, so they want us to play Michael Jackson. They want us to play Beat It and make it sound like Keith Urban, which fucking sucked. It does not sound good whatsoever. But that's what it is. Like, to me, when I hear band competition, that's immediately where to go to, preconceived notions, but that's what they wanted at first, right?
Right. Well, they wanted the same thing kind of with us. And I remember when we went into the actual audition, the first audition that was like past, like, does your band suck or not? We checked your live videos. Okay, come in and actually see if you guys don't fall apart under pressure. So we go in and it's like lights on our faces. We can't see any of the people that are actually deciding whether or not we're going to be in it. They've like in the back, in the shadows, behind everything. So it feels super weird. No one will talk to us. The sound engineer has been dealing with 30 bands throughout the day already. He doesn't want us there.
They give two shits.
They don't care at all.
Nothing.
We felt so weird. I swear I thought I lost it for us because we played our song Shake Me Up, and we played Drive My Car by the Beatles, and then we played House of the Rising Sun, our own version of it from like what the Animals had done. And so we played the Beatles song and they're like, that was awesome, but I flubbed up the guitar solo or like lead moment in it, and it was so obvious and bad in my mind that I was like, that's it, I ruined it for us, I ruined it forever, we can just pack up now. But they still seem to really like it for whatever. They're like, play us another song, we can't license that one because it's the Beatles, so what else do you guys got? And we're like, well, okay, let's play this one. We played House of the Rising Sun. And they were like, also really cool. Can you play us something else? We can't license that either. I'm like, I don't know what to do. So we ended up not having to play any more covers because we didn't have any more covers ready. But we were going to do that. They pushed us through, and then we had like, it was like 2 months to come up with new renditions of covers and see what we could do and then tell them what it was. And we were going to like do Be My Baby. We were going to do Somebody Love from Jefferson Airplane, and do Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. They didn't, they approved, actually in a Kinks song too, but we got approved on the Kinks song. We got approved on Be My Baby, but we didn't want to do them. Then they approved Somebody to Love, but we're like, hey, we really want to do Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman. So they approved all these songs for us. And at the end of it, they finally get Pretty Woman for us like a week before. We thought we were going to end up doing Somebody to Love, which was still, we liked the rendition of it, but it was very taxing vocally for me to sing like Grace Slick. And so we got approved for that one. I remember D. Snyder told us, he's like, you guys did a really good job, but it just sounds like the same song. We're like, we thought we did a little bit more than that. He's like, you basically just covered it. We're like, all right. But we got
Twisted Sister. Come on, man.
Yep.
Come on. I mean, there's some respect to that, right? I mean, so was this in the recording of the show? He said
he said it in the feedback. But he still passed us through. He's like, I want to see what you guys actually sound like. And he said that he was really happy that he did because he loved what we sounded like as a band. We just were not. We've never been a cover band, which is weird now because we're doing all these covers like as like we've got access to BMG's publishing. And so we put out two covers and we recorded four and we're getting ready to do a bunch more just because we like producing stuff. It's just fun homework.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what is it? Spoiler alert? I mean, you guys won, so I mean, there's something to that. There was magic in the room. So, is it audience voted?
It's audience voted. So the audience gets one vote, and the judges each get one vote. So it's a best of three kind of a situation. And then there were a couple rounds where the judges weren't involved at all. It was just 100% the audience voted who they wanted to have win the whole thing. So there was one round where it was three bands, and instead of like we all play, and then one of us is sent through to the final round.
I got you.
So we got voted through on that one.
And you got prize money, and are you signed on BMG? Is it like a publishing deal, or is it like a record deal? Like, how does that work?
We got a record deal, and so it was supposed to be like an artist development thing, but they came to us, and they go, well, hey, we're going to put Jordan with like 10 writers. He's going to write two songs with each of these writers, and then the best four songs or five songs we'll record. And then the best three of those we'll actually put out and see if they do anything from a streaming standpoint. And I was like, that seems like a lot of work. Here's our catalog. Just check this out. We're already a band. See what's going on. And it took about a month. And then they got back to us and they're like, hey, actually, we want to sign you. And so we got like, we kind of just upgraded our deal because we were talking to them about how like, you know, we're really like, we're not just lucky kids. We're lucky kids for sure, but like we're not just lucky kids that happen to be in the right place at the right time and have never done this before. We do this. Do you want to work with us? We've never had an end like this before. And it was really cool. They came back and we eventually worked it out to where we could even potentially be putting out two more records with them.
That's wow. They upped the deal. I mean, you don't hear that very often. Like, honestly, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you guys that you guys won. But then also, it just wasn't like a shit show of a deal. You know what I'm saying? Because like when you like revisit or you hear, or you even see like these voice offerings or like the Idol deals, it's like it kind of is what it is. They own every piece of it. And then at the same time, like you're just screwed. And like if you don't make the cut, bro, you're done in a year. Like that is it, you know? But somebody like BMG... And I know some like Nashville BMG for whatever that's worth. I mean, that's like a real working like studio, like or recording label. Like their nose is to the grindstone. It's not like it's Virgin Records where, well, you're just another band.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, like there's actually like effort and work like put into
it. Oh, yeah. No, there's been a lot of effort and work, especially with the release of this record. I mean, we've got weekly meetings. We've got consistent communication through text chains and video chats and everything that we can put together just to be like, hey, what are you doing? Okay, what do I need to do? Okay, where's this going? And like, when is this thing going on? Except for last Monday when we were supposed to have an interview that fell through somehow. But but everything else has been really, really on point and good to go.
Yeah, comedy. It's a circle back. I love
it. Circle back.
That's good. Okay, man. I mean, it sounds like life is like heading your way. I mean, your brother's back in the band now. He recorded Cattle in the Sky, helped produce it. We're all caught up to speed. And the album's been out for a bit. I mean, are you guys happy with everything? I mean, is this the happy ending that you wanted so far?
Oh, there's no ending. Like it's just the next chapter of it. I mean, we're Cattle in the Sky, even though it is like it's the brand new shiny toy, it's the new record. For us, it really is what the album says on like its cover, a collection of songs from Hounds. And so it's the newest material and some of the oldest material all on the same record, because this is our entrance into being like this rock band, which admittedly, I don't even know if we want to be a rock band. Like, I mean, as we're getting into stuff, our next big challenge for us is like, with the first Hound self-titled record, we went in and we recorded the record live. It's all live. And we just put it out that way. We're like, if we can compete with people at this level, like I'm trying to compete with the Black Keys. I'm not trying to compete with, you know, like Sally Silver and John Mr. Music down the road. I mean, we wanted to really compete at a national level. And so we're like, if we can get attention with our live sound, then we'll up it. And we upped it from there to go, okay, let's make the best rock record, rock pop record produced that we can in the studio. Still have the live qualities to it, but let's take it to the next step. Let's really add some production. Let's add some of the things we love, where we're pulling in like Ennio Morricone stuff. And we're pulling in, I mean, we love Hans Zimmer and we love Charles Mingus and we love Kamasi Washington and stuff that's like much more orchestral and thoughtful in the way that it's put together. So trying to do that, within the production of this record, and then With the next one, our real goal is to learn how to not play our instruments the way that we've always played them, but really actually learn how to play the studio and create something that's still pop centric, because we want to compete in the pop realm, but we don't want it to be based on the structure of rock music anymore. I mean, the stuff right. that we love so much is, I mean, rock music forever was like the crossover. They were the bad boys of music. They were just putting out stuff that had moms going, you can't listen to that. That's devil music. You got to hide your records and Stephen Curtis Chapman covers. And we want to be, I mean, we want to do something that matters, not something that's just really clever for a month. And so that's kind of our next personal goal. Is my brother and I, we were talking about it last night. One of our favorites right now, our two favorites, are Kendrick Lamar and Tyler, the Creator. And it's interesting to see how they both have done their records. Tyler basically produced everything by himself. Like, he collaborates with his friends and stuff, but like, he loves to create everything. I mean, he even says he doesn't want to be known as a rapper. He'd rather be known as a director, along the lines of Tarantino and Christopher Nolan and some of these other, like Wes Anderson, stuff like that. And I think that's brilliant. I think that if you box yourself in on just one thing, you're not operating as, I don't know, as much as you could be. I'm losing words on it. But like, and the Kendrick Lamar, he's also pushing boundaries and stuff. Like, hip hop music is doing what rock music was doing in the 60s and 70s and even up through the 90s to an extent. But there's just nothing that's risky, I think, in rock music in the same way anymore. And so it's not appealing. I mean, I want to do stuff that makes somebody go, what? Not something that they're like, yeah, it was a good song. All right, next. Like, not interested.
I can agree with that. I feel like I can't be shocked anymore. You know, I grew up with Marilyn Manson, okay?
Sure.
And that's the most shocking thing. Right. It was huge. I remember seeing that the morning going to school and my mom immediately turning it off and said, that's something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, I can agree with that. There's, and it's hard to say this sentence because it's hard to justify it, like, to go across the board, like, on all rock music.
Right.
Like,
no, you can't, it's easy to offend somebody and say like, oh yeah, all rock music is dead. I don't want Dave Grohl calling me to tell me that I'm wrong. That hurt my feelings.
Yeah, man, no kidding. But the thing is, like, you said a couple of things that really triggered me. It was like, yeah, if you're going to do rock music, you are competing, like, with Foo Fighters. You are competing with Black Keys. Where, as opposed, like, if you are, like, a pop thing, like, dude, you're in the mold. Like, you're in the mix. You can actually, like, compete and do something. Mm-hmm. And then also, yeah, there's nothing shocking about rock music, like, I can really think of. And really, what's new about rock? Like, in the past, like, 70 years. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, when you mention people like Kendrick Lamar, like, when you listen to, like, Pimp a Butterfly, dude, my favorite.
Come on.
Kendrick Lamar record. It's a jazz record.
It is.
There's so much he is saying, like, within those lines, like, especially culturally, like, in what he sees in his peripherals. And so, yeah, I think rap music has always done this. It's just never been in our pop culture. It's never been as big or magnified as it is in the past, like, 15 years, maybe.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, they're the ones kind of leading the way and kind of shocking and awing. And so anybody that can really say, or at least throw up props to say, I just want to say something and I want to jar people, at least to make them think, that's a challenge within itself.
Yeah.
And there's also something I feel like you said, like, do you have the sense of, like, you want this immortality? In a way, because I feel like a lot of musicians have this, like, you want something and you want it to last. Like, is there like a, like, immortality, like, complex to that?
I think that there is to an extent, but I mentioned Charles Mingus and I think about some of these other bands too, that are like the huge bands that no one's going to be able to ever get out of their minds. Elvis and the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Doors and Led Zeppelin and Queen. And, you know, Michael Jackson, when those bands and those artists did what they did, it was something that had never been done before. And I think that the next step in musical, like, movement and forward motion, it's risky to go after it, because it would be easier for me to go, we're going to put out another rock record. It's going to be pretty cool. And people are going to like it because it's hooky and it's got a great riff and it's got a great thing going on. But all of those bands were doing something that at some point or another, someone went, this is never going to work. You can't do this. or they just didn't give a shit. And like they, but even though no one gave a shit about what they were doing at that time, they still kept doing it. Didn't matter if somebody liked it or didn't like it. They just did it because they're like, well, this is what I like. And going back to Tyler, the Creator, one of the interviews he did, he was talking about how he's like, do you even like the shit that you say you like? Do you like the clothes you wear? Do you like the stuff you're listening to? Do you like the stuff you're creating? And that really hit me in a weird way where I was like, oh man, like how much of what we're doing is just being a bunch of hype beasts and just being like, I like this because Gucci told me it was cool. Like, or like, because it was on the cover of some stupid magazine that I don't even really like, but there's someone that's important in the celebrity or pop culture view that has said, this is really cool, so I should think it's cool, or people aren't going to think that I'm cool. And until you start taking some of those things apart for your own life, it's easy to just trap yourself in with stuff you don't even enjoy listening to. Like I had to like rearrange a lot of my own thoughts over the last couple of years about like music and where we wanted to go with stuff, because it's scary to say, I'm going to do something that's not like this thing that brought us success because I like this other thing better. Eventually people start smelling that it's a fake though. And those bands that made it because they had a really great record and then they try to do it again, but they didn't really like the first record to begin with, they're not even doing anything anymore. I mean, or they're a band that no one is listening to.
Right. There's also the thing of like when these situations happen, I always think about like bands like maybe like Oasis, but more specifically like Smash Mouth. Like if they didn't have like All Star, yeah, you know, they would still be doing the thing, because some of those songs like are actually pretty good for whatever okay. it's worth.
You're hitting a trigger point in our band right now, because Smash Mouth is our bass player's undercover favorite band ever. Like
that's it's okay.
He loves it so much, and I'm absolutely, maybe you can help me on this. Their record that it's like doesn't have All Star, I don't think, but it's like it was the one that sounded like it had all the hits. They're basically the Doors with a different singer, and it's so weird when you listen and break down what they're doing. Like you could trick someone into believing like the but it. Whole
Walking
record.
On the Sun. Fushu Mong was it on that record, or Astro Lounge
okay. is the one okay. that is like the big one. We do this thing, we do our own podcast called In the Queue. It's the four of us just sit and talk about three songs that we have listened to the most this month, why we like them, what's going on with their music, what's going on with these artists. And we just make it a thing where we just talk about music, because we don't even take the time to do that most of the time. So it was an intentional way for us to hang out and just talk about stuff we think is cool. And if someone wants to listen, they can listen. And Jack picked three Astro Lounge songs. He's like, I'm making a point. Smash Mouth doesn't suck. And if you think Smash Mouth sucks, then you actually don't listen to what they're doing. It doesn't matter if you do or don't like the vocalist. They're more than All Star.
Dude, I agree with him 110%, because that production on Astro Lounge is insanely out of this world.
Yeah.
Like the same people that really hate on Smash Mouth are the same people that hate Sugar Ray. You know, like if you fucking hate Sugar Ray, I don't know if we can really get along. But anyway,
I don't think most people know they love Sugar Ray. You put on a song and they'll sing along to it. They're like, oh, who is this? And they're like, I don't know. I know this song. I've heard it so many times. Like, this is Sugar Ray. You're being an idiot.
Bro, so, if you go on Spotify, just play their top 10. Done. Yeah. You're toast for the rest of the day. Like nothing can compare to like Sugar Ray's top 10.
Nah.
But for Smash Mouth, like, would you hate to be Smash Mouth playing a rock star or all star? You know, like it's the song that they always, yes, it's a hit, but they also had a bunch of other hits. But that's the song that they're always attached to and that they're always known for, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like Oasis. Like, wouldn't you hate to sing Wonderwall all the fucking time?
I'd hate that so much more. I'll sing All Star.
I do too.
Like 30 days out of the week. Before I'll sing away like Wonderwall. That's the one. It's they're essentially like the richest meme band ever, because they're never gonna not be that meme of like, all right, anyway, here's Wonderwall, like the guy at the back of the party kind of a thing. So
just hold the sign. Done. Yep. Oh man. Yeah, dude, we could really go all day. We could talk about music all day. But I know I need to let you go.
Right on, man. Hey, thanks for having me. This was fun.
We did the thing. I got to know you.
Yeah.
We talked about the music and everything. Got to know you.
For sure, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, of course. It was a beautiful moment. We got to it, everybody. I think you could authentically tell we did enjoy our time. And you got to know Jordan Sloan and the band and the history and the music and moving forward and a little bit, maybe more that you haven't even heard of yet from Cattle in the Sky. That's the newest album that's out. So you should go get it, go stream it, go download it because it is out. It's everywhere. It's accessible. Maybe even buy it. Pretty sure you can go to their website and do the thing and buy it there if you like. Show your true love for a band, houndsounds.com. But if anything, you can go give them a visit, give them a follow on their social media at Hounds. All right, for me, add us in my podcast, Facebook, Twitter. Who uses Twitter? Instagram, and then the talks at Unofficial Brandon. And what else is there? Of course, our website. SMIPodcast.com is where you can check out all other content, links, anything associated with the show. Want to know more about me or what's going on there? SMIPodcast.com. You can drop us an email. If you just enjoyed something from this episode, I don't know, it made you feel something. All I ever ask is that you just share it, that you just share it with a friend. Maybe they'll get something out of it too. Maybe they'll appreciate it. They'll appreciate the appreciation. All right, folks, we're here Tuesdays, sometimes Thursdays. The best way to keep up with the show is to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. It will load up perfectly right on your phone and maybe take up space until you get to it. Okay, I don't know. It's a settings thing. You can delete them later or when you're listening to it. I'm not going to tell you how to run your life. But anyway, this is it. Happy surviving, everybody. Take care of one another.